Fall is in the air, right? I realize it's technically not fall until, what, September 22nd or something like that. But it is in the air. Anybody else feeling like you're just getting punched in the face every morning with allergies right now? Anybody? I knew I could get some amens on that one. Me too. Me and my Flonase are best friends right now. So, kids are back in school. Can I get an amen?
Amen.
Amen. And all the teachers said, oh no. Yeah, and, you know, and millennial women everywhere are drinking their pumpkin spice drinks, right? So we know fall is among us. I feel a little bad this morning after all summer having a fun song to kick us off. You know, I'm like, oh, where's our fun song this morning? But it's fall, man, fall season's past Labor Day, right? So we're into a new series here that we're kicking off today called Crossing the Line. And before we get there, go back to the first title slide. There we go. Before we get there, I want to just acknowledge most times, like 90% of the time, all these amazing graphics that we have every Sunday are, and the announcement graphics and everything you see, that's done by Miss Liz Pavey back there. That's right. She does an amazing job, and we're very grateful for her. And we also have other very talented artists in the group. You know, like if you're out in the foyer, you see Suki's artwork, and she is so faithful to keep rotating that out for us and bring new artwork in. And if you haven't seen it, go see it. It's interactive. There's an iPad out there. Pick up the iPad, and there'll be music, and the artwork will, change shapes and do dance and do different things. So we're thankful for Suki. We're thankful for Caitlin, who has an amazing gift at using a scroll saw. Go figure. I couldn't even imagine the intensity that it takes to do that, but we now have some new scroll saw artwork out in the foyer as well. So we have some amazing talents. And so Liz, this series, decided to reach out to another artist among us, and she's probably embarrassed that I'm going to do this, but she's in the room right now. And these graphics for this series were actually brought to us by Miss Dorothy Sue. So we're very grateful, Dorothy. Thank you. My understanding is this is hand-drawn and then digitized. Is that right? Is that how that works? Yeah, okay, so there's a skill there that I don't have, so I'm very grateful for our artist in the room. Crossing the line. Go back to the previous one. Stay there. Crossing the line, you see the individuals there. Take a look at that before we get to the question. What do you think's happening there? What do you think's going on? Because I realize that as we come up with sermon series titles, nobody cares about them nearly as much as I do. Liz and Amy will tell you. I will spend hours and just, you know, debating over what to call a series. But here's the question. This one, I think, well, what do you think it means? What are we going to be talking about? Crossing the line.
Violating boundaries.
Okay.
Freedom.
Freedom. Okay.
Emotion.
All right. Nobody said anything wrong yet, so brokenness and wholeness, yeah. There's kind of an interesting dynamic going on with this sermon series title, Crossing the Line. And the reason I liked it so much is because I like a title that has a double meaning. And this one is certainly one that can have a double meaning. In fact, I think we've heard a few of those already. You know, because if you think about it, how can crossing the line be negative? We'll start with the negative. How can that be a bad thing? When can we cross the line in a wrong way?
I always take the joke too far.
You take the joke too far. Okay, so you cross the line. If you're like me, I'm so far beyond the line at that point, I can't even see it behind me. So how else might it be a negative?
Getting arrested
would be crossing the line too far. Yeah, that would. Invading somebody's space. Okay, yep. What else? Anything else?
Rebelling.
Rebelling? Yeah.
Wandering farther than you're supposed to go.
Wandering farther than you're supposed to go, yeah.
We could. Too much of a good thing.
Too much of a good thing. Yeah. If a little's good, a lot's got to be better, right? Not always. Well, let's get off the negative. How can crossing the line be a good thing?
Finish the race. Finish the race.
Oh, man, that's good, right? Yeah. Get out of your comfort zone. Yeah. Change. Yeah.
Overcome barriers.
Somebody else said something there.
Cyclones crossing the goal line.
Oh, there it is. There it is. Cyclones crossing the goal line. Somebody threw it down this morning. Now, that could be a... That was crossing the line in a bad way, Amy says. Building new relationships can be a crossing the line. If you're an introvert, we hate crossing the line. Can I get an amen, Matthew? Yep, we don't like that at all. You know, there can be a lot of emotions that come up within us when we think about crossing the line, even just as in a generic sense. If I were to say, crossing the line, even in that moment, what was the first thing that hit your mind? You don't have to say it out loud, but what was the first thing? And then think about, was that a positive feeling or was it more of a negative emotion that you immediately reacted to? Was it like crossing the line? Oh gosh, I know those people that cross the line. They get in my bubble. They just won't leave me alone. That's kind of a negative way to see it. Or were you just like, Mitzi said freedom. Were you like crossing the line? Yes, freedom. It's kind of interesting because it can go either way. And really, it tells us a lot about ourselves and how we just hear kind of a non-emotional phrase, crossing the line, and to see which way we take it. It can be scary to cross the line. It can be uncomfortable sometimes. Sometimes it means disagreeing with someone, you know, and learning how to love someone that may think unlike you. That's challenging. Especially in our political climate, you know, we have to cross lines and work with people that may not vote like us, and we're called to love them anyway. How do we cross those lines? And I think as I think about this series, I think whether it's a different political party, a different lifestyle, a different religion, denomination, the question we have to ask is, are we crossing these lines in appropriate Jesus kind of ways? Is that really what's driving us? Because if we look through the series, we're going to be all over the Bible, but you know, eventually we're going to talk a little bit about Jesus too. And if you think about Jesus, he crossed all kinds of lines, didn't he? I mean, he crossed a ton of lines when he was here. And I think the question we have to ask is, so how can we be more like him? And when I say that, what I mean is multiple things: uncompromising in our truth, uncompromising also in our love. How do we find the balance that Jesus found in crossing the line? So let's start today with what I think, well, these are all going to be challenging. Can I just say that up front? These are not going to be easy messages. But I think this first one to me can be one of the most challenging because it's the most difficult line I think we ever have to cross. And I call it the line with ourselves. The line with ourselves, kind of understanding who we are, what makes us tick, what's deep within. And so we're going to dive into that. So get ready to be a little uncomfortable. Something's wrong, though. Do you sense that? Can you tell that? I mean, just as you think about culture, think about friends, think about your job, think about the world, something's wrong. There seems to just be an underlying tension, an underlying anxiety that just exists in our culture. I mean, I look around and I see people are struggling. They're searching for meaning and their purpose. And they're struggling and they're in pain and they're looking for relief. Usually Thursday mornings are my sit down and take all my thoughts and notes and write this manuscript that ends up on this iPad every week. And as I sat down to type out my thoughts for this message, Liz forwarded me a voicemail that had come in on the church phone asking me to do a funeral this week for a young man I didn't know, but he was in his early 30s and he took his life last week. Something's wrong. And this was after I'd sent an email the day before letting some Ashworth folks know about a family that used to be here whose son, who was 44, who took his own life a couple weeks ago. And then as Carrie and I were talking yesterday, she was telling me about even an 11-year-old in the metro area that took their life because of bullying. Something's wrong, isn't it? I mean, something is wrong. What is going on? It's terribly, terribly wrong. And when I say that, I want to qualify this. Nothing I'm saying is looking at these individuals to say something's wrong with them. I'm not casting blame. I do not understand that hopelessness that they must have felt that said the only solution they felt like they had was to end their lives. So nothing I'm saying today is derogatory for any of those individuals, just so you know. But I do look at it, even the one that grew up right here in Ashworth Church was a good friend of Joe Ballard's back there. And even with church experience and church expression, something's not right. We are not immune from this, are we? You know, and I think that creates a challenge for us sometimes, especially as Christians. Because I feel like along the way we were sold a bill of goods that told us something to this effect, you know. Well, you know, pray this prayer, and then you go to heaven when you die, and the middle doesn't matter. Anybody else hear that kind of mentality growing up? Yeah, me. Doesn't make any sense, though, does it? I mean, that doesn't make any sense at all. What are we supposed to do in the meantime? Is the faith we have just for down the road, or is there something that Jesus is wanting to do within us here and now? Jesus didn't die on the cross just so we could go to heaven when we die. I mean, when I read the words of Jesus, I'm so encouraged because I read things like he said, he comes to bring life and life to the full. And he comes to give sight to the blind and hearing to the deaf and freedom for the captive. But I look around and I don't see a lot of that taking place. And I struggle with that. But even beyond these three tragic stories that I've just shared, I've had other conversations in the last few weeks. People that I've spoken with, they've just come in and they've said, you know what, I'm just dry. I'm spiritually dry. Where's God in all this? One who looked at me and said, you know what, I'm about to lose it all. And I've never really done this Jesus thing, but I've nowhere else to turn. And then there was the person that just looked at me and said, you know what, I'm just tired. Can anybody relate? Yeah. You see, this series that we're going to be talking about is about relationships. It's about relationship with God, relationship with others, relationship with the world. But if we want to have healthy relationships, if we want to kind of maybe dig beyond what we see in the habits and patterns we've got, I think we have to begin with an honest look within to try to understand what's going on within ourselves. You know, we spent an entire summer looking at Psalms and all the emotions that we found there and talking about how we can be honest in our emotions, but just being honest with our emotions really is the first step to real spiritual growth and health. There's more that comes with that. We have to look below the surface to discover, why do we feel the way we feel? What are the behaviors that we have? What's driving us? I mean, I don't know, maybe I'm the only one, but there are sometimes things that happen, maybe last night in my house, maybe with a 7-year-old that was going a little bit crazy, maybe me feeling just, just me, thank you. I thought so. But I want to know what's moving that? Yeah. What drives that? What is it that's in me that's causing that to take place? And to be fair, I feel like for the most part, the church has just been silent and we don't talk about that. We just say, well, just pray more. Yeah. Well, dear God, if I prayed more, I wouldn't have time to do anything else. Well, just read more of the Bible. Well, I've done that too. Anybody else there? Where you're just like, what is going on? There's a book, and if you haven't read it, I do recommend it. It's called Emotionally Healthy Spirituality by a pastor named Pete Scazzaro. And in his book, he talks about this. He deals with this, and he uses an illustration. It's an image of an iceberg. And in that, he writes this, in our more honest moments, most of us will admit that much like an iceberg, we are made up of deep layers that exist well beneath our day-to-day awareness. You agree with that? Yeah. Only about 10% of an iceberg is visible. This 10% represents the ways we conduct ourselves and the changes we make that others can see. We are nicer people, more respectful. We attend church and we participate regularly. We, quote, clean up our lives somewhat by addressing any issues with alcohol and drugs, to foul language, to illicit behavior, and beyond. We begin to pray and we share Christ with others. But listen to this. But the roots of who we are continue unchanged and unmoved. Thanks for coming. I know if you're like me, you're like, I don't want to talk about this today. I don't like this message. But I know for me, I've got to figure out a way to address the other 90%. I get what he's saying. I understand that the 10%, yep, I can make it look really good and pretty most of the time. But the 90% still lives under the surface. And I know if real transformation is going to happen, I'm going to have to dig deeper to get to the root of why I do the things I do, to recognize what has shaped me, to see what makes me happy and what makes me sad and what makes me angry and really just what makes me tick. And Scazzaro, in his book, he talks about talking to a guy who was following Jesus, but he just didn't seem to really grow much in his faith. And the guy described it this way. He said, you know what? I've been a Christian for 20 years, but I've realized that I'm not a 20-year-old Christian. I'm a one-year-old Christian 20 times. You ever feel that way? You get stuck in that loop doing the same things over and over again. And so my question is this. Well, then how do we fix it? How do we fix it? And I think my therapist friends in the room would look at me and go, that's a terrible question, Brent.
Yeah.
Shh, Amy, shush. Just kidding. It is a terrible question. That question is flawed. That question to me is flawed. We want to be fixers. We want quick and easy answers. We want the steps. In fact, somebody I was speaking to this week, we talked on the phone, and at the end of the conversation, they said to me, well, that really wasn't what I wanted to hear. I was hoping you were going to give me, like, here's the 5 things you need to do to fix your problem. And you didn't tell me that. Matthew, do you do that in your therapy? Like, here's your 5 simple steps to wholeness in life. We're such a microwave society. We want the quick and easy. We don't, and what we discover is that what shaped and formed us took years. That iceberg took years to develop, and it doesn't overnight just go away. But there's the other side of it, that are we willing? Are we willing to do the hard work, to dig deep, to figure out what's inside, to maybe go to say to ourselves, why don't I experience the transformation I desire? Why does Jesus and the power of the Holy Spirit not seem to really transform me? See, what we realize, what we have to realize, that the things we hide, the things below the surface, are the things that really do impact us. What does AA say? We're only as sick as our...
As your secrets,
yeah. I mean, that's a great saying, isn't it? We're only as sick as our secrets. And Jesus talked about that, talking about light and darkness and how much I think we love to keep things in the dark. But here we are, we're encouraged to bring things out. Because if we keep them in the dark, we will not find wholeness. We will not find healing. And really, the more we keep things in the dark, the less likely we are to know ourselves or even to know God. And I can hear you think, now hold on, now how does this impact my relationship with God? How can my understanding of myself impact what I know to be true about God? I think the problem is we think these are two different aspects of our lives that are disconnected, and therefore one doesn't impact the other, but it does. In fact, this isn't even a new thought. In 400 AD, Augustine wrote this, how can you draw close to God when you are far from your own self? He prayed, grant, Lord, that I may know myself, that I may know thee. Now, does that shock anybody? Is that like, hold on, that doesn't seem to make sense. I just need to know God. That's it. Just let me read my Bible. And yet, 1,600 years ago, one of the fathers of our faith is going, hold on. There's more to it. There's something deeper. You really want to know God? Know yourself. Move forward 1,000 years in the 1500s. Oh, sorry, not quite there. In the 13th century, a Dominican writer, Meister Eckhart, wrote this, said, none can know God who does not first know himself. So, I mean, here we see this thought being developed in the 1500s. St. Teresa of Avila wrote in her book, The Way of Perfection, almost all problems in the spiritual life stem from a lack of self-knowledge. And then around that same time in the 1500s, John Calvin, in his institutes, in the opening of his institutes of Christian religion, wrote this. He said, "Our wisdom consists almost entirely of two parts, the knowledge of God and of ourselves. But as these are connected together by many ties, it is not easy to determine which of these two precedes and gives birth to the other. The knowledge of ourselves, therefore, is not only an incitement to seek after God, but likewise a considerable assistance in finding Him." Wow. That's crazy, right? I mean, you guys may know I've went through a year of the Ignatian spiritual exercises. I'm in the process now of training to become a spiritual director, and this has become such a critical component of what it means to know God and to experience transformation. There's an element that says, I have to know myself. But this can be scary. I said that. This can be uncomfortable. And we kind of have to acknowledge that there can be some barriers along the way, some impediments that we have to kind of push through to getting to the place where we understand ourselves, which first I think would start with just denial. Not just a river in Egypt, right? I mean, denial. Dad joke. Dad joke. You're welcome. Throw that one. Thank you for that ba-doom-tsh back there. I heard that. It's much easier to just turn the blind eye, isn't it? It's much easier to just go, why? That I'm, you know what? I know I am the way I am. You just deal with it. We see that in our culture. But do we really want to live that way? Do we really just want to turn a blind eye? I mean, we assume ignorance is bliss, but in reality, what we refuse to see, denying these things could be killing us, could be killing our relationships, including our relationship with God. John chapter 8, I was reading this week, and Jesus, you know, starts to get a lot of questions about who he is and the authority that he has and all these, and why he's doing the things he's doing. And they don't really understand much of what Jesus is saying. And in this moment, Jesus says to them, he says, "To the Jews who had believed him, Jesus said, 'If you hold to my teaching, you are really my disciples. Then you will know the truth, and the truth will set you free.'" We've heard that passage before, right? I mean, look at just what he's saying. If you hold to my teaching, you're my disciples, and then you'll be free. To me, this is seemingly straightforward. Okay, just listen to Jesus, follow his way, and I will have freedom in life. But the crowd that day chose to interpret this in a much different way. Look at what they said. It says, they answered him, "We are Abraham's descendants, and we've never been slaves of anyone. How can you say that we shall be set free?" What is that? Denial. Denial. Jesus is sitting there in front of them, and he's saying, look, here's the way forward. If you want to experience freedom in life, here's how you do it. Follow me. And what do they go? They say, we're not slaves. What are you talking about? Who are you talking to? Not us. And their refusal to see the spiritual implications of what Jesus was saying led them to just this place of denial. But also, if you look further into this story, what they end up doing is they get to the place where they're just completely against Jesus. And Jesus is doing nothing but offering them freedom. And they're like, that's not what we're after. That's not what we need. The conversation goes on, and Jesus responds to another issue here, not understanding their position. Look at how Jesus responds to them. He says, "Very truly, I tell you, everyone who sins is a slave to sin. Now, a slave has no permanent place in the family, but a son belongs to it forever. So if the son sets you free, you will be free indeed." Now, this crowd, they're stuck on being a slave. And Jesus understands that. And he's like, that's right. I see where you are. I see what you're struggling with. And when we feel we have to, you know, I think we get to this place too. When we feel we have to fight for our position in life, it blinds us to where we actually might be. And it causes us to miss what's actually in front of us. I mean, do we understand the power of what Jesus is saying here? He's saying, look, there is a slavery going on within you. You're not seeing it. You're not wanting to own it. But let me tell you why this is so important. Because if you stay a slave, you don't ever recognize and enjoy the benefits of sonship, of being my child. I mean, to me, that's the no-brainer, right? I mean, that's the no-brainer. Do you want to be a slave or do you want to be a child of the King? Which one do you want to be? And in that moment, they just can't see it. They're so stuck on the slave aspect. And we read, and if you can finish reading that story, you understand that they were just stuck. They were not going to be moved in this, because I'd love to tell you that, man, and when Jesus said this, they said, oh my goodness, we see it. We're slaves to sin. We want to be set free. Make us your children, Jesus. No, that's not what happened. If you keep reading through John 8, what you see is, they ended up accusing him of being demon-possessed. They say, you are of your father, Beelzebub. They went into defensive mode. They throw the walls up. They refuse to hear anything that conflicted with their preconceived ideas. And in the end, they pick up stones to try to stone Jesus. Fascinating moments as Jesus just walked through the crowd. Okay, cool. I mean, but they're ready to kill this guy. Denial will hold us hostage to keep us to a place of not being willing to open ourselves up to deal with the pain, to deal with the struggles that may be within, to find this emotionally healthy spirituality. We have to be willing to take that first step. We have to be willing to lean in, to understand, to find out what motivates me. What is it that I'm believing about myself? What is it that I'm believing about the world? And probably more importantly, what am I believing about God? What am I believing about God that may be keeping me stuck here? You see, I think for some reason we have a problem with the idea that we are broken people. Now, in church, we say that all the time, don't we? We're broken. The world is broken. Genesis chapter 3 happened. Adam and Eve, they're co-reigning with God in creation. And when given the choice, they're like, God, we're really not satisfied with this. We think God's holding out on us. So what do? They step out away from God. They take the fruit and their eyes are open and they realize that God had not been holding out on them. But the brokenness that came into creation was a part of their story and became a part of our story. But somewhere along the way, we feel like that's unacceptable. That our brokenness isn't who we are. That we're just like, no. Why do we resist that so hard? Why do we feel like we have to be the people that have it all together all the time? Why do we insist on hiding that brokenness? As long as we hide it, I'm convinced we don't find freedom from it. I think what this does is it puts us with other barriers. And forgive me, I'm just going to run low on time. I'm just going to run through some things. But when we get to this place of denial, I think it leads next to isolation. I don't want anybody else to see my flaws, my warts, my shortcomings. So we pull back and we refuse to reach out. It's what Adam and Eve did. They hid from God. It's what we do. We isolate ourselves from everyone. And I will just say there's a time and a place for silence and solitude, but there's also a time and a place for community. Placing ourselves among the people who love us and we love to experience the presence of God through community. Because often healing can come through community as well. Mixed into these barriers, you also have things like guilt and shame, feelings of unworthiness, self-condemnation. All those can probably be wrapped up together. There's more. Assuming our worth is based on what we do, our performance, you know, assuming our worth is based on what we own, our possessions, or assuming that our popularity is what makes us who we are.
That's American culture.
It is. It's American culture. And maybe as I've gone through those, maybe some of those have struck a nerve with you to say, I realize some of those are things that I deal with. I know they are for me. And I'd be lying to you if I said this was easy. But what I want you to do is hear the voice of Jesus calling to us, saying, do you want freedom? Do you want healing? Do you want life? A couple years ago, we looked at questions that Jesus asked. And there's a fun story where he goes by a blind man. And he asked the blind man, he says, do you want to get well? I always thought, Jesus, that's such a dumb question. Such a dumb question, Jesus. But it's an incredible question. And in that message, we talked about the challenge of change. And I think that's really what we're talking about here as well. I mean, we kind of are confronted with that question as well, aren't we? Do you want to get well? Do you want to be healed? And again, it's not like it by saying, yes, I get to go, great, you were healed. No, that's the first step in a process of opening ourselves up to the transforming work of God in our lives. There are many challenges to getting there, taking that first step. It's going to challenge our comfort. I mean, it's easy to stay where we are because it's what we know. It'll challenge not only our comfort, it may challenge our faith. The things that we think we know about God or Jesus may have to be deconstructed a little bit to be rebuilt. It's going to challenge our security. It's going to challenge our identity. I mean, all these things are possible to be challenged. But you know, one of the biggest challenges of change is knowing where to start and taking that first step. And I really, as I was sitting over here during worship this morning, I was thinking about this message, and this message kind of has been unsettled with me all week, just to be honest with you. Because this to me is a message that doesn't get resolved today, because I want to be able to say, just pray these words and it's over. But that's not how it works. Even as we go through this series for about the next 6 or 7 weeks, I can't promise you at the end that all is going to be better. But what I do know is that we can't move that direction unless we're willing to take the steps into the light. Do you want to get well is the question. And I understand that one of the biggest challenges I think we have with this is our perception of God. I really do. Because I think so often when we think about owning who we are, maybe seeing some of the flaws and the sins or the unhealthy things that we have, I think we struggle because we're afraid if we acknowledge it, if we own it, that God is going to be the first one there to, how dare you? You idiot. You are a worthless piece of trash. We have this view of God. We've been convinced for so long about the wrath of God, which does exist, it's there, but it's not greater than the love of God. It's not greater than God's desire and ability to overcome anything and everything that may be holding us back. We are afraid God doesn't know. We're afraid God is going to smack us around. And therefore, what we do is we sit in this. And what I read about God is that He loves us. Go to the story of the prodigal son. The son wished the father dead, took the inheritance, went away, squandered every stinking piece of it to the point he had nothing left. In our culture, we would have said, this dude deserves nothing. He's made his bed. He's got to lie in it. And yet when he comes to his senses, he says, my dad's servants get treated better than I do. Let me just go be a servant. And he doesn't even get a foot in the driveway before his father takes off running. That's the picture of God that we need. The God that when we just lift up that foot and say, I'm willing, I know there's internal work that needs to be done. I need help with my emotions, with my anger, with whatever else, with addictions that I may have. It's the God that when we just, you barely get your foot off the ground and God is there. Every time. And what I need you to know is that God doesn't just care about your spiritual life. He doesn't just care about your spiritual life. He cares about your whole life. Why, when Jesus was asked, what's the greatest commandment, did he say, love the Lord your God with all your mind? That's not what he said. He said, love the Lord your God with what? With all your heart, with all your soul, with all your mind, with all your strength, with everything within you. You know why? Because he cares about all those things about you. That's the God that we're talking about. That's the God that just says, come, come. One of my favorite authors, Trevor Hudson, wrote this. He said, becoming honest with ourselves open our lives like few other things can to the incredible depths of God's grace, acceptance, and power. The Apostle Paul experienced this. He knew. In fact, this morning I was thinking about Paul and some of the things he said. You know, he was the one that could say things like, I'm the chiefest of sinners, and that he wasn't like falsely being humble. He was just like, no, I realized who I was. 1 Corinthians 15:9, he says this. He says, for I am the least of the apostles and do not even deserve to be called an apostle because I persecuted the church of God. Look at the honesty. Look at the self-reflection there in that moment to be able to say, all right, I know who I am. But then look at what he says next. But by the grace of God, I am what I am. That grace that Paul knew is the same grace that's offered to us. You see, we don't have to be scared to know who we are, to own who we are. We can step fully into it and say, okay, God, here I am. Take me as I am, and you will find the Father running to you, grabbing you and saying, yes, my child, let me help you find freedom. So are we willing to take that first step and cross the line with ourselves? I hope so. This is going to be a fun series. It's going to be a challenging series. Next week, I've got some friends who are going to join me on stage that are much better to talk about some of this stuff than I am, and I'm very excited about this. But it always begins with this: are we willing to take that first step?